Hello and good morning, everyone. My name is Franz Heinzmann. I'm part of the ARSO collective in Freiburg, Germany. We do software development and did some projects together with the CBA here in Linz. And I will talk a bit about the first 2 days of our labs here, our hackathon, where we met at Stadtwerkstatt with some other people from like-minded projects like the XRCB radio network in Barcelona, people from the CBA and various others who share the mission to build better online tools for community media and surrounding fields. On those 2 days, these first 2 days were part of a project to actually soon build a prototype for replicating and exchanging metadata of community media outlets between the Cultural Broadcasting Archive here in Linz, the XRCB radio network in Barcelona, and likely Freie Radios Net, a similar platform in Germany, and potentially others like media.ccc.de or other community media outlets that publish in the internet. So the first day was focused on metadata modeling. What does that mean? It means that to efficiently exchange data and to build tools on top of shared data repositories, we need a shared data model of the content that we are publishing. And the first day was focused on this, and we talked through different ways on how to get there. So we talked a bit about objectives. Why do we want a shared data model? We want this to build shared front ends. That means that if you develop a nice podcast player, for example, that can work right away with the content from different sites. We also want to have something like shared search indexes so that you can we can have a community media archive site, for example. Well, archive, of course, in that context doesn't mean historical archive. The archive starts seconds after publishing, usually. So some way to browse through repositories of community media. As you all likely know, this currently is hard to do. If you try Googling for content from civil society media, there's Google doesn't have that filter, and it's quite hard to actually, what people usually do is check the different sites if they kind of know what they are looking for. There's no good way to browse this at the moment. What we also want to enable by having means of exchanging content in an automated way between different sites is to build cross-platform recommendations. That would mean that you likely know this for example, e-commerce stores where you can get recommendations based on what you're looking at the moment. We want something similar for content from civil society media, so to foster exchange and collaboration across borders and contexts and scenes, so that if for example, XRCB publishes on a music festival and CBA publishes on the same music festival, that those different pieces would be interlinked and automatically reference each other. So this is like the field we've been tackling for a while already. And so on this first day of the conference or of the labs day here, we've been talking about how such a data model can look like. There's like a few technical details. I won't go into too many details here, but what you see here is like the temporary or in work in progress result we arrived at, where you see content items like published pieces of content and media assets and content groupings, something like shows or podcasts or that group together pieces of content, and we've been talking about the relations between these and how to model this in a way that it can work across platforms. This, of course, is nothing new. So we also talked about other similar data models that attempted to do this. we looked at a few of them and still think that it's important to model the domain we're in and then align them as much as possible to existing standards. But all this can also happen in iterations, but what we need to agree on now is like the general basic layout of things, how things relate to each other. So this was the focus of the first day. As you see, this board we've been working on is quite big. We talked about other things too. Here is a slide that kind of tried, we've been working on this also in iterations, this tried to kind of line out a bit a potential architecture for exchanging content of different sites. So you'd have like independent outlets like CBA, like Freie Radiusnet, like XRCB, and then you would have a suite of software tools that would ingest content from these different sites to then build shared tools on top that would work across the content from all these sites. And then what we call replication here, which was the focus of the second day, is the way content can be exchanged between such nodes in a network. And yeah, let me go on to the second day, which was focused on data replication and exchange protocols. We had three presentations that day. One outlined a project called PubHubs, which is currently in development in the Netherlands, and they attempt to use Matrix, which is a protocol for real-time chat. That's where it's coming from. It's mostly used as a messenger, but these people around PubHubs in the Netherlands, they intend to build more social networking features on top of that protocol, with the central part being a centralized authentication component that would allow you to register once at a provider in the Netherlands and then use various hubs, as they call them, with this shared identity. And this talk outlined a bit the challenges around authentication, where you both want centralized components and maybe also want independent or privacy preserving ways to access individual hubs. This was one presentation. Another presentation we had that day was by Benjamin Bellamy on the topic or the ActivityPub protocol. ActivityPub is a quite common protocol these days to exchange or to create a federated social media universe, also called the Fediverse. The most prominent implementation is Mastodon, which is like a federated, decentralized Twitter project. And this protocol also provides a few means of how different sites can interact between each other, usually focused on social use cases, like commenting across different outlets, so that if you have an account on a CBA site, for example, that would use ActivityPub, you could use that account to comment on content posted on other outlets like XRCB. So we had these two presentations, and I did a third one on some other approaches to data replication that built upon technology that was mostly built in peer-to-peer data exchange protocols, where a central property is that all content is signed with digital signatures, which gives you the nice which gives you some assurances that mean that you don't have to trust the means of transport in between. If you have a shared network of nodes that exchange content, and all content in the network is signed by the original authors, this makes it a bit easier and more straightforward to form a network of these nodes, because each end user or each host could individually verify the authenticity of any piece of data that kind of floats in without having to trust intermediaries. These were the basic topics of the second day, and then we had a longer discussion in the afternoon about how to move forward here. This discussion does not yet have a fixed conclusion, because these protocols really have different angles to them, that there's not like a solution of this is the best protocol for what we want to do. So we likely will experiment with all of the mentioned approaches, and they are also not incompatible. There's bridges that allow to use Matrix apps to access ActivityPub content and the other way around. So this field is still in debate. We'll see how things turn out, but the day served the discussion we had already clarified quite a few things, and we have a much better common understanding of how these protocols could interact, or what we likely want to pursue further. And we will want to experiment and also kind of separate the layers more and see where, like, one topic that was discussed quite a bit was that we will likely want to have a split between a layer of content that is replicated efficiently and can, which is basically be public in our fields. We're talking mostly about public content. And then there can be different social layers on top for user interaction. So this was a broad overview over the first 2 days of the conference. We'll now go on with the other days, and in the discussion later on, we can also gladly do a bit of brainstorming or diving into the actual use cases. I didn't talk about that too much, just a bit at the beginning, but of course, we have quite a few ideas already, but we'd also be curious to hear your ideas or points, what the actual end results of having a shared, an interconnected community media ecosystem or public space on the internet should be. But let's move that to the discussion. We'll have enough time for discussion, and I'll pass on to Roland, who will talk about the results of our workshops on search and recommendation.
Yes, thank you. The European Cultural Backbone Week had many insights, and we have been, wanted to see also what is the status of technology and research in terms of how do I find media and what can be recommended, who is working on what. And I started with, here on the mirror board we have as well here some, where's my... No. I'm not used to mirror so much. So we have been collecting here as well a number of insights, starting with a self-test about using open source tools to search alternatively, not using Google, not using Bing. So where is the search? So now we got it here, hopefully. In fact, what I did is I was reporting about using Circs is a meta search engine. You can set up any provider, any media provider can set up its own search engine, which is using other search engines as input and also connects to the hook to its own content. And then you can do mixtures. You can propose and search for items, and you get listed something which is grabbed from Bing or Google or DuckDuckGo. But very soon you get also the content from your local media, what you are doing. And we have set up a search engine 1 year ago at Faircom, with Versuch.net. It's not very prominently promoted, but it's being used by our customers and users. Faircom, by the way, is a non-profit organization, but we do a lot of IT and open source developments for public administration, education, and a number of other customers and also SMEs. And we have a bunch of different services, and one of them is our search engine. So if you search for Linz, for example, then you get results which are starting with the Wikipedia entry, because we have listed as an engine and entered as engine and defined as engine that Wikipedia should always be first and has the highest weight. And then you find good search results from other sources. And then we have also said, please look at Wikibooks, which is a side project of Wikipedia, and in the Wiktionary. And then again, use some results of other search engine, which you see here. DuckDuckGo, Wikibooks is coming again. And here you could add also if there we would have been connecting, we didn't do it yet, with CBA, for example, then we could list as a fifth result always the content of CBA related to Linz. Yeah. And we use that in our team, and many others use that as the default searching. It's very simple just to define it as a default search engine, and it works quite well for the daily use. You do not have to switch to any other professional search engine. We have connected also our GitLab, for example, our internal documentation to it. And so the FAQs from our services are very prominently posted then at the search results. So my question was then, at my presentation, do we need to artificial intelligence to personalize search results, or do we just need some tools like this, decentralized search? Use your build up search engines, go to your trusted search engine provider, which does some meta search results. And my hypothesis is for the time now and for our first next steps in providing a European cultural backbone, probably don't need artificial intelligence right now. Sure, it can help us, it can make the search results even more precise, better recommend to what we really want to see, but it's probably good enough for now to start. We have, on the other side, we have seen what the European Broadcasting Union is doing. They are working on Peach, and some of the broadcasting stations like RTI is involved, BR use that already or testing it. So what you do first here is you say what you like, which movies you like, and then it creates some recommendations, but you can also choose for diversity, so something different, or also behind there is a large model of artificial intelligence, which is collecting opinions and preferences of their users and then creates their preferences and the recommendations for you. That's already in production at some sites and is being widely tested, and it's cutting edge artificial intelligence technology what they use. We've heard in the presentation of the EBU that they are interested to cooperate with us. However, there are some obstacles like legal issues, copyright issues, and the code is not open source, so we cannot simply integrate it in our lab situation, test it, and also improve it. But I think we could convince them during this week and during our talks and discussions that it makes sense to cooperate with the civil society organizations and also let us and get access to these possibilities. To test my hypothesis, there is another tool widely used already by civil society organizations called PeerTube. At Faircom, we have set up our own PeerTube instance. There are more than 1,000 already. As you see, it looks like YouTube or Vimeo, and we call that FairTube. Our target groups are, as you see here, So you do have trending things, and I can also try to discover. So there are already some buttons. If I don't know really what I want to see and listen to, then I get recommended either channels. These are channels from other peer-to-peer instances, which we have subscribed to. And this is a channel from education institution where students have created nice videos to recommend, for example, how to teach physics or mathematics. And there are other channels also from activism, for example. And in fact, we as moderators of this PeerTube instance define which content we get, which we subscribe to, and then you can already discover and get entertained or find your things here. Certainly you can search also by keywords, and for example, Dorf, we had a lot of eco villages using that and doing a whole event and then uploading that on that platform. And yeah, it's after their live event, 132 people again visited this contribution, which is not much in terms if we compare, but it's also okay for a community media platform. So without putting a lot of effort, in fact, we didn't put any effort into FairTube, just promoting it a little bit. People found that on our portfolio, we have nice content and can distribute it. And the technology is here and it's evolving very quickly. PeerTube is really a very vital community. It's supported by NLNet and Framasoft, a Netherlands and French IT collective. And they are discussing here, this is a discussion GitHub, where you have all the code and the developers discuss how should we continue to develop recommendation strategies. So should we recommend to users something or not? And just read it. It's a very interesting debate. Some say, no, we should not even recommend, because as a host of such a PeerTube instance, anyway, have a moderation, moderator role and want to recommend my users exactly what I have selected. And I can intervene if there is some propaganda which I do not want to have on my platform, then I unsubscribe that other PeerTube instance and then it's not anymore here. So the result of this discussion is somehow that if you create a channel in your own on your own account in your channel, that you can boost a few of your videos so that they are, if people are then trying to discover them, that they are promoted first. Yeah. And the combination of boosting, rating, so that you can rate also videos, and also, why not profiling, because it's my local provider whom I trust, and I trust them that they collect some preferences for myself, is a good combination where you can get a very nice user experience already with technology which is here. In fact, what we need, so it's summarized here somewhere. We need probably a plugin and to develop a plugin for PeerTube, which is really then doing this ratings on user preferences. That's not available, but that's not a big deal. If you sit together in our lab situation for a few weeks, probably can make this plugin and it's available for the worldwide PeerTube community. So I can summarize that search and recommendation is not a big challenge. Technology is here. If you want to combine it certainly with other platforms, with CBA and many others, then we have to sit together again and see with the APIs and the metadata how you are managing that, how we can integrate that. But in fact, as if you use Circs as a common search engine, you can define engines. There are more than 100 already defined, also for commercial platforms. like Bandcamp and others, and we would need to define and develop engines for CBA and others, and then we can create a nice search result, including content from CBA and other media platforms. Okay, then let's see what you will be presenting us regarding the speech recognition and the tools around.
So, another really important building block for this shared digital public spaces we are talking here this week is language tools. Yeah, I think it's a really fundamental issue for coming challenges and coming crises to use these language tools, apply them, and deepen participatory democracy. So, language definitely is a barrier to overcome this, and technology, state-of-the-art technology, provides a lot of solutions, possibilities in order to build bottom-up communities. Mostly on Wednesday we had some talks from essentially four projects. The Austrian T-Alp project talked about the language model and the complication of having local language models in order to treat language variations and dialects. Followed by a European language project, which mostly presented an API and a catalog to use machine learning algorithms applied to languages and translations. The European Broadcasting Union presented Eurovox, as my colleagues already mentioned. It's at this stage it's not open source, so we have the problem that it doesn't solve our pipeline, but it's really promising what they build up and the whole tool chain they made and how they connect the tools. So it's quite inspiring to see like the outcome and have like possible applications of this, but unfortunately, right now it's not open sourced. Only the core API of the Eurovox project is announced to be open source. So it's really important to also work on our own tools and make these pipelines, connect them. So open audio search is one approach, actually developed by Arso, and it's mostly doing like automatic speech recognition, transcription, and then it's indexing this content for making it available for full text search. So basically, that's the basic issue of the language tools. Once you have done this transcription, this speech to text transcription, and you have a text-based model, you can imagine a lot of applications. And we like a short outcome of this brainstorming, because we like dedicated really a few time compared to the other issues, was to imagine some of these applications. Once you have the transcript done and this. Okay, if you do it on script, you have this alignment of text and speech. So you can like focus on a word and hear this part of the audio, or the other way around. So there's a lot of possible imaginative approaches for outcomes. Yeah, one for this quite important one is accessibility and the use of like apply to subtitling, for example, to have like tools for hearing impaired people to access audio content. Part of the DL project, there was also a presentation of like even use this alignment of text and speech for pre and post production somehow on editors to easily access this content and be much more faster on setting up programs. And yeah, so and a whole area of really of an area with a lot of possibilities, this information extraction, Open Audio Search also is doing. That's the basic you need to do to make like shared indexes. So make search indexes. So that's one need we have, like when connecting these nodes to make like a search across the different nodes. Yeah, mostly also to find these hidden treasures in all this in this audio content. So you also can, well, we talked about like named entity recognition. That's mostly like recognizing somehow the meaning of spoken of sentences. For example, if you would say CBA is organizing a conference at Linz, so this tool should recognize that CBA is an entity, organization, Linz is a place, and yeah, that can be done in connection to other projects like Wikidata, for example, where we have this semantical meaning of language. And yeah, as Roland also mentioned already, that's also the basic for content-based recommendation systems. And yeah, actually, at this stage, I won't go any deeper in the content. I think imagining possible outcomes and would be part of the brainstorming now for the session and for the Q&A. Thanks.
Yes, and this is my introduction again. Hello and welcome for those who haven't been here before. This session has been live streamed by Radio Froh. Please take this into consideration. I wanted to start the Q&A, and we do it in the same manner we did it in the other events and days. So if you have a question, just stand up and try to sit on the chair here. Are there any questions already? Are there questions in the internet? Do we know? Are there any? Alex is having a question.
Yeah, just a question. I briefly addressed it to Franz anyway. We have programmed here the aspect of which protocol to use to exchange metadata with the replication engine. So we had guests from Matrix and ActivityPub. Are there any outcomes concerning this question, which protocol to use?
I wouldn't say there's like a fixed outcome, something that has been decided what we exactly will do. However, I'd say that for interacting with other social tools, ActivityPub currently seems to be the protocol of choice. So, for example, if we want to enable a user interaction layer on the content that we are publishing, user interaction could mean either commenting, which of course brings the whole field of moderation with it. User interaction could also mean likes or shared playlists, which are a bit easier likely to do because the moderation overhead is not there. For these aims or objectives, if they should work across different sites, I think ActivityPub is the protocol of choice likely these at the moment, also because you can then integrate with other ActivityPub based tools sometimes, at least that still has to be kind of evaluated on a case by case basis, because as it is often with such things, having a standard and a protocol does not necessarily mean that all applications that use that protocol actually adhere to the spec. And in ActivityPub land, that often there is Mastodon is like the first and biggest implementation of the protocol. So other tools that build on the ActivityPub spec often more or less the most important thing is to do what Mastodon does, to integrate with it, and that not always is exactly the spec, or the spec has many parts to it that might not be implemented by Mastodon and then sometimes are considered a bit useless because it's there but also not working. So yeah, for social features, I think ActivityPub is promising. For the actual replication of content, I think it's more important to settle the data model and to develop actually the tools to actually ingest existing content into a shared data model. And then if you have different nodes that use the same tools or the same data model, how exactly data is replicated between those is there's different ways to do this, and I think we might want to start with something very simple that is efficient in bringing the content from one side to the other, and then likely look into, for example, ActivityPub as something to properly spec this out, or Matrix. Matrix currently is a bit of an outstander because it's mostly used for real-time chat, and while the protocol allows to do different things with it, most things that are defined there in detail are tailored towards real-time chat usages. So there's rooms, there's activity notifications, presence notifications, which user is online. Those are not features that we would need for content federation. However, there's also other things being built on Matrix, so that's definitely a space to watch in the future also. And some approaches also basically use Matrix as just a log of messages that don't really might look not look well in a regular Matrix client, but they use the technology to build other things upon that. Has its pros and cons. I'd say it had some overhead, but also makes some things easier. So I think for content for social features, ActivityPub currently is the most promising approach because there's already the Fediverse of interconnected tools for direct content replication. We're still looking into what the most fitting thing is.
I would agree that ActivityPub is quite promising. Also, what I showed before with PeerTube is using ActivityPub, and you can find also in your client content from PeerTube and vice versa. So this is really working well. We have implemented a number of chat services for public institutions, schools, public administration, and we found that it is very important that people can also share their emotions, and they like to use emojis and stickers. Yeah, and we need to look at that as well, especially if we want to address not only the youngers, also everybody likes it, and how to use and integrate that as well as a feedback channel. And I think here we could also differentiate from other platforms who do not allow that, or only who have only one thumbs up possibility and nothing else as an emotional feedback. And so this could be a level of differentiation then. And Matrix is supporting that.
Just a brief aspect that brought in Benjamin, who said this could also be an approach to serve both protocols, so use bridges, and also might be maybe to involve our users into both networks. Is this something we can think about? This is the one thing. And the second thing is also with the data model. Gert Jan was proposing that we at Community Media might have quite different requirements to the data model than usually public service broadcasters could have, or knowledge institutions. So is this also, might it be this, maybe in the next step then with the data model be approached to have various data models mapped?
So to the first question, that certainly is an option that already is possible these days, of course. There is bridges and bots that shuffle messages between all kinds of networks and protocols, from Matrix to ActivityPub to IRC to email. You can always do this. You'll just listen for messages and pump them into another channel. I think if that makes sense to develop really depends on the use case. So right now for Matrix, I think you can either use it as like an underlying base technology and build new things on top, like PubHubs is doing. Or you can use it like as a notification channel if you want this, so that in some room there's a message whenever something new is published on some site. But the use of that is at the moment, I'd say, quite limited, but that might change if there's like more advanced tools being developed on top of the Matrix protocol. But also, this doesn't have to be decided now. If there's a use case for an integration, that's always possible to develop also at a later stage. Right now, I'd say with ActivityPub, there's more use cases there at the moment. With Matrix, it's a bit more either adopted as a base technology, if it makes sense, or wait if there's useful points of integration.
Hello.
My name is Matthias.
Unfortunately, I couldn't join the whole conference, but first I want to say it is very impressive what you summarized here in the morning. So it's great to hear how far technology already developed. My question is, due to the title of the conference, European Cultural Backbone, how far is technology in terms of making a good search possible and combined with the language tools that we have already? Because, I mean, we're talking about, in terms of Europe, 24 languages. So first of all, are all these languages, are they already, you know, fit to be translated, or are there strong engines they can translate them in a proper manner? And second question is, what happens if I search in one language content of another provider of another language, which may even be linked to a third party's content? So we have three languages maybe involved, or even more. How are the outcomes of these recommendations that I get there, or of the results of the search engine?
In fact, what you get results if you have the content in that language. So if video on an Echo Village is translated or subtitled in five different languages, then my bots will be able to crawl them and show them in the results in the language which are entered. So we do not have to do some translation at the search phrase, but we simply show what we have available. And if you interconnect that through the API or through an additional engine in Circ, then we immediately can also highlight and weight very highly that result. For example, they show the Echo Village, which was a German presentation, I think, of tech in the Echo Village community in Spain, where they have the headquarters from the Echo Village community. So if they, if we run in Barcelona with our partners here a search, a Circ engine with local content and highlight the archives which they have, they would grasp then the content also of our, if they decide to do so, and interconnect and subscribe to our FairTube platform, and they would get then the already translated, subtitled content, and they if you enter then, what is the name for village in Spain? Village, probably?
Pueblo.
Pueblo. And then they would get this as a result as well. Yeah. Oh, but only for those who have subtitled, because all the other doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So not much effort to do if we have the subtitling up and running.
Just a short note to add, which was like part of one of these presentations on Wednesday. For sure, there's a huge inequality between languages, and mostly there are like four groups. Like for sure, English is like the most used and most working, and a lot of this prototyping on language models is done with English. There's a second group in Europe, which is German, French, and Spanish, which is working really well and well supported in most of these tools. A third language of widely used languages, but not that well supported yet, and or even not supported in these language models, and then really a lot of minor languages which are not even on the radar of these projects.
So clear answer is that it doesn't work. It doesn't work with minor languages. Is that right, or do you get just very imprecise results then?
Yeah. It will really depend on what exactly you're doing. So if you're talking about automated speech transcription, I think currently with the open models I know about, the quality will degrade a lot the smaller the language gets at the moment, more or less. So it really depends. Has someone put in the effort to train a big model? And of course, that's harder to do for smaller languages because you will have less training material available publicly. With proprietary models, I think it's similar. I don't know if there might be studies that actually evaluate this, but it will likely be similar. And with automated translation, it's also similar, but there's some more or less recent developments that try to overcome this, actually also with speech to text models that take a bit of a different approach and create these really large models that don't need that much like annotated training data, but can work on any text or any audio as training data. But I don't know if those are at the level yet that they can compete with a well-trained, more traditional model. When we started with open audio search for German language, at least it was still the case that the traditional model performed better. One of the approaches also is that, especially if you translate from one minor language to another minor language, that you go like through English. Mm-hmm. That of course again usually reduces the quality a bit. Some of these newer models they skip this step and have kind of some meta language internally. In a way, it's not a language, it's just knowledge of the model. But there's still things like this field is progressing very fast, and it's always like, I think things have to be tried out. And also for something like search, it's not the same as readable. You don't need a perfect text for search results. You just need good enough of the key terms being translated for it already to be useful. So I think you'd really have to look at it in practice, how well it performs. You won't beat Google in raw performance of the search.
There are ways to train these algorithms even with minor languages so that they can get better and better. Is there any project you know so far in terms of European languages to train the minor used languages and the smaller communities?
In fact, what you need to do is you would need to improve the models, the language models. We are currently working together with TLP to create a better model for Austrian idioms. Wenn wir im Dialekt sprechen, dann hören sie uns nicht wirklich gut, oder? Wenn wir im Vorarlbergerisch redet. oder auf Tirolerisch Gott sei Dank auch nicht so gut, um das zu erkennen, to see what then the quality, to improve the quality you need to train. And here the methods are here. You need a lot of computing power, and there are not many people who can do that. And so what we have now, our first steps in such projects, to do it with university in Austria, Universität Graz. They are the first who would like to translate a lot of lectures in several languages. And the first challenge is to understand the professors who are talking Austrian, not really German. Yeah.
Are there any more questions in the audience? No? Then I have a question regarding semantic standardization. I would be interested, like, there are two approaches to include minor languages. One is to include them via standardized category searches. So this is also a possibility. How do you integrate that in your model so far?
So what standardizing categories, we had our frustration with that in several projects. There was one project who tried to create a map of sustainability places, yeah, shops, repair cafes, many things like that. And it should have been a layer on top of OpenStreetMap. And this project was trying to create a set of words, to say it in simpler words now, and a categorization, and by creating that they failed. So they were discussing on and on what fits into what, and is a repair cafe part of being a shop or being a tool or being a place or a social hub. And to make all these relations, they tried to do such a set, but they failed, and the project is not alive anymore, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. It was very ambitious. And what we've learned from this project is try to keep it simple, try to stick to simple keywords and keyword search, and let the user just enter 3-4 keywords and then do the rest by the search engine. And certainly also support other languages, and the search engine will give you results if you have content for that language. Yeah. Is this covering your answer?
Yeah, I'd add maybe one thought. So we've also been talking about categorization, and of course all existing sites and databases of content have their means of categorization, and of course they always differ between each other, oftenly even within a single outlet there's like different kinds of categorizations being applied. And there certainly will not be any universal solution to that. However, especially with this automated keyword extractions, there's also an approach that it's called like a vector similarity search, where you don't try to extract exact keywords, but what you're trying to do is, if you have a repository of content or text, you try to cluster it by automated means, by finding related pieces of content and that have similar words and similar keywords, but you then don't necessarily have a single name for this category. It's more like the concept of sustainability, eco-villages, and 3 or 4 other terms that kind of form a cluster around which a lot of content is grouped. And I think that's very interesting to try out how far you can get with that, because something like that could lead to, you could identify the hot topics of the past 2 weeks, for example. And that could even work across languages if you have some training material for that. And then you won't necessarily have an automatic label. You'd more have a group of labels with scores, but that could then also something be that can be combined with like a semi-editorial workflow or something. So you'd see these automatic generated clusters, and then moderators, humans would assign actual labels or headlines to them, because that is still something what likely you cannot fully automate it, because you want to decide what is the actual term for this cluster. But then once you did that, all the keywords from different sites that align to that cluster can be grouped in there. And so you can have this. So categorization is mostly useful for browsing content. If you don't know yet exactly what you're searching for, but you're coming to the front page and then you want to have like a list of topics and you want to be able to refine those. And for that, I think trying out these clustering approaches versus creating manual shared topic lists or something can be promising, especially if it's possible to refine manually.
Thank you very much. Franz Heinzmann, thank you. Thank you, Gerald Kogler, and thank you, Roland Alton-Schmidt, for presenting the labs and the hackathon. We are continuing our conference with the future of community media in approximately half an hour at 11:30. So please stay alive and come back.